And our guest, Mark Gumbinger, and we're going to take your phone calls this hour. If you have a question about the Edmund Fitzgerald, the Andrea Doria, other sea stories, perhaps, or haunted lighthouses, fire away. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Gumbinger, and your phone calls, of course. These are great ghost stories, though. I'm telling you, they're movies, most of them.
Yeah, they are. Well, we made them movies in our documentary format. So the first one we talked about was the ghostly lighthouses of North America. Then we later talk about the Great Lakes, the haunted lighthouses of the Great Lakes. Those are two separate one-hour programs. And Virginia told me she missed a couple calls. If you want to give her another call, last hour.
What do you mean she missed a couple calls?
Well, I guess too many people called for her. She's just a lonely girl. She needs somebody to call her.
All right.
So give her a call at 1-800-642-9860, and she'll be glad to talk to you. If it's busy, just keep calling, or you might get the voicemail. But
we like to do that to people, Mark. We like to just disrupt their lives.
Why not? But anyway, as I was talking about the Sishua Lighthouse, people see the captain's face in this mirror in his old bedroom. They can see this. I mean, and this is documented by like 100 people have seen this captain. They smell his cigar smoke, and he's a prankster. He turns around and he flips these forks upside down, George. It's an amazing, amazing story. And not only that, one time there were some kids that were going to try to break in. They actually broke down the door and some other things. And like about a month later, the people, the current lighthouse curator came back one night, and the alarm went off again. And they think the captain set off the alarm because these kids were back in the area, and he was worried they were going to damage the light again. And it was the old captain saying, "Hey, come back here," and protecting his lighthouse years after he died.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Ralph. I'm calling outside of, I'm in my truck. I'm outside of Zanesville, Ohio.
Yeah, Ralph.
Yeah, in 71, I worked on the Edmund Fitzgerald. I was working under Captain Peter Pulser. He was the captain at that time.
Oh, my.
And I guess I owe my life to a seagull, because at the time, the policy was if you finished up the season and tied the ship up there in Ashtabula, the last 3 days you got a 10% bonus of everything you made that year, and you were guaranteed a job next year on that ship. Well, they told us we had one more trip, and I had all my Christmas presents bought. It was in December, and then we were halfway down to Toledo, and they said, "We got one more trip." The scuttlebutt came around. I said, "Oh, man." I was mad. I was 20 years old. I saw a seagull following us.
You wanted to go play?
Yeah. I wanted to get off that ship. You know, I'd painted it about two times, it seemed like. And I reached down and I grabbed a bolt that was laying on the deck, and I threw it at that bird. And my glove, my mitten, they call them choppers, or deer skin with sheepskin inside, it froze to the bolt, and it went off into the drink. I couldn't find another mitten to save my life, and you just can't work out there without the proper gear.
Oh, no. You'd get frostbite. That'd be it for you.
Like right now, you know.
And, how late was your last trip that year?
That was, I think, I got off on the 6th or 7th of December.
I heard he was a very meticulous captain, the captain before McSorley.
Pulser was amazing. And I'll tell you what, that November, couple weeks before that, when I got off, we took a 42-degree list.
Okay? Wow.
I'm laying in the bunk, and all of a sudden my curtains are hanging down from the foot of the bunk. I'm laying on the bulkhead with water coming in my little – I used to crack it, you know, and get a little fresh air because we're below decks. And I'm laying there looking at the water coming in the porthole, gurgling in, and all this groaning and crashing and banging, and then slowly it came back up to where I was in a standing position. Well, believe me, I got dressed in record time. I got back upstairs. It was like a a coffee break room, like, and everybody was looking at this little dial that was in the middle of the ship. And I go, what the heck is going on? They said, all they said was 42 degrees.
Oh, man. Hey, tell me about the hatches. Were they that bad?
The hatches, oh, my God. Sometimes they get warped. They were huge and heavy. We had a big machine you had to put them down with. And a lot of the clamps weren't functional. And but it was only two of us deckhands and two deck watches, and our arms would feel like Popeyes. I mean, they felt like lead before we got halfway through. So a lot of times we would do every third head, every third clamp, every other clamp. Those are the ones that worked, you know. And a lot of them were broken or twisted or had been, you know, caught when the machine was picking it up. But we, in the summertime, we didn't put them all down. And if the weather was bad, the guys might have been, you know, dogging it. Who knows? But I know that that wrench, it was like a 2.5 foot long tuning fork of steel. It would get mighty heavy. And
you had to do it all manually. And what was the water temperature like in the middle of November out in Lake Superior?
Well, all I know was that they said that, you know, you had about 12 minutes no matter what time of year it was.
I couldn't believe that the Fitz didn't have any kind of depth finding equipment on it.
No, they didn't have that. They went, well, Pulsar knew that place, you know, like, but he did 44 years, I think he was a captain, 44 years when I was with him.
Same length Captain McSorley did.
And they knew every nook and cranny of those lakes up there.
Hey, what was it like when you heard that the Edmund Fitzgerald went down?
I was amazed. I was shocked. I was bummed out because all those guys, you know, most of them worked since the boat was built.
So you knew those guys?
Yes, sir. Most of the guys, except for your deckhands and your deck watches, they kind of, you know, there was a bit of a turnover there.
What do you think about the Caribou Shoal and the six-fathom shoal? What's your opinion on that?
Well, do you remember, do you know that the Fitz had a wreck? We had a wreck with a Canadian ship going into the Sioux back in 70?
Yeah, I heard there was a little bump going there, a little collision.
It was a 250-foot dent.
Wow.
It was quite a fender bender. And they had done some expedited patching on the inside of your walkway from the front to the rear. There was an under deck walkway on both sides. And you could see
spot
where they had welded
heard.
It.
Spot weld. I heard they just spot welded a lot of it. They didn't do a true
right.
bead weld.
Right. And I think that could have weakened her. If she did hit one of the shoals, that could have... there could have been a lot of stress because I used to sit on the end of the deck there and just watch it undulate. You know, there's a certain amount of flex built into the ship, which it had to be, you know. And as you're going across the swells, you might have two of them underneath you, and you could just watch it. It just looked like a piece of spaghetti sometimes.
What do you know about Superior Shoal also that's up there before you get to the islands?
Right. There were some islands that we used to hide behind. You know, we'd get on the leeward side, you know, when it got real rough, but sometimes you were talking about how they were loading them. They changed the loading. Well, they used to load us. Sometimes we'd only be like 8 foot from the deck to the water.
Wow,
so
that's
cool.
Low.
Yeah, and because I know because I painted it. They'd lower us over the side on a catwalk, and when we were empty, and we'd paint as far down as we could reach.
You're right around that time, and I think it was 69, 71, and 72. I think they kept advancing the loading requirements. They were leaning.
Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how low we were when we'd leave. We were going up to Silver Bay up there.
She was a red ship, wasn't she?
Red with tan, you know, or beige, red and beige.
Yeah.
And that was the queen of the Ogilvy Norton fleet.
Do you ever get to the Mariner's Church?
I haven't got, no, I drive truck. I haven't been up that way. I was only up that way one time, and I never got there. No, but I remember those guys' faces just like, you eat across from them every day, three times a day, and you know, goof around with them, drink beer with them, have eating contests.
And did you quit in 71?
Yeah, me and another guy got mad. We got down to Toledo to the CNO docks, and I said, look, I'm not going to do another trip. I've got all this stuff. I don't have any gear. We got off, and we both bought a bottle of rum and a 1960 Ford Galaxy.
That's funny.
Hey, did they pay?
He lived in Ashtabula. I lived in Cleveland. He drove me as far as Cleveland and took the car on to Ashtabula.
All right, $1,970, but how much did they pay you?
I'll tell you what. I was making, clearing about a little over $300 a week.
That's pretty good money then.
You're
20-year-old kid.
Money than my dad. I was making more money than my father was.
Absolutely.
He was working for NASA.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion of how the Fitz sank then?
Well, I think she definitely took on water. The hatches, they were warped. There was big spaces in between. We took a lot of water all the time. And
it was a matter of time, wasn't it?
I think it was fatigue to that one side that was broken, to tell you the truth.
Caller, if you can email me, I'd love to hear from you. If you can email me at edmundfitzgerald.com, love to chat with you sometime.
I still have my last pay slip that Peter Polster signed.
Would love to talk to you. Go to edmundfitzgerald.com and send me an email. My name's Mark, and love to hear from you.
Great. Ralph, thanks for calling. Appreciate you being on the program. That's the first time in my career I've talked to anybody who had any association working on that ship.
Isn't that great, George?
Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Sherry calling from Branson. How are y'all?
Sherry from Branson.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. May I give a shout out to the Coast Riders, please?
Yes, you may.
Oh, you're awesome. Hi, Mark. Great show tonight.
Well, thank you.
Great.
Do you have any questions for us?
I do. Do you only handle the U.S. shipwrecks, or do you research any international ones?
We're pretty much nationwide, mostly Great Lakes. We've done the Andrea Doria, the Edmund Fitzgerald. We talked about the Eastland disaster and the Rouse Simmons. We have separate programs than those. We also have one called Shipwrecks of Lake Michigan, which covers the Eastland, the Rouse Simmons, and the Carl Bradley that we talked about earlier, and several others, including the Carr Ferry Milwaukee and the SS Wisconsin. They're in a separate program, too. But we're pretty much nationwide. We just came out with a new program on U.S. lighthouses last month. And then, of course, we have the three programs on the Edmund Fitzgerald and several others. We have 30 programs now, but all U.S.-based, nothing international yet.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, because I work for a cruise line whenever I'm not here, and one of our training videos is to watch the sinking of the Oceanus, the coast of South Africa in 91. They had a video, actually shot of it, from the passengers who were on the ship.
Oh, my.
It's very, very
graphic.
Disturbing. Very disturbing. And also, what do you know about the Bermuda Triangle up there in the Great Lakes?
There was said to be a Great Lakes Triangle, including in the area of the Edmund Fitzgerald. That's been poo-pooed a little bit, but you can't argue with the fact that there was just so many shipwrecks up in the area of Whitefish Bay. It's literally the graveyard of the Great Lakes. And just so many bad storms up there and so many crazy occurrences of loss of life in ships and tales of Great Lakes and maritime lore that it's hard to argue with that premise that there is a certain area there geographically right by Whitefish Point, up north by Caribou Shoal, by I think as far west as Marquette. And obviously you have the Fitzgerald sinking in that area and many, many other ships.
Oh, interesting. But do you by chance cruise after investigating all of these different shipwrecks, or do you try to stay on land?
I always said I haven't gone on one in a long time, and I said my luck, if I'd go down to Florida or something and go on a cruise, the ship would sink.
I love it.
Well, I won't go with you then.
Okay, sure. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Hey, say hi to Wayne Newton for me out there in Branson.
Or sure Glenn Campbell or Moon River guy.
They're all here.
Right. Branson's a huge musicals capital now. It's rivaling Nashville.
Amazing.
Or not. It really is. Hey, do you know anything about the Empress of Ireland? That ship that with the tragedy in the St. Louis River in 1914.
A lot of loss of life. It's not my forte. Phenomenal loss of life.
Fog did them in.
I think it's over 1,000.
I don't know how many went down, but I know fog had a lot to do with it in that case.
Yeah,
they said it was a tragedy almost equal to the Titanic.
Yeah, we have another neat lighthouse.
1,012 lost their lives.
Is that what was it?
1,012.
Yeah, I knew it was over 1,000. Wow. We have another neat lighthouse up in Lake Superior called Standards Rock, and it's out in the middle of the lake. It's about 50 miles north of Marquette. And I had the honor of being in a Coast Guard helicopter and flying over it.
And back in, I think it was 1961, there was three Coast Guard men, and it was strictly a bachelor's situation. And you'd be stationed out there for like 3-4 weeks at a time, and some guys couldn't take it. They wanted to get off right away. But there was a gentleman working out there one time, George, and he had an old pipe, and he was working down in the base of the lighthouse by one of those. It was like a, I think it was a 1,500-gallon gas container for the generator, and he had a puff on his pipe.
Oh, no.
Blew up, and the flames came right out of the top, blew the top of the pilot house out, and that gentleman was never seen again. The other two Coast Guard guys were, they made a little tarp, and they are on the outside of the lighthouse with a can of beans for a couple days until a ship finally came by and picked them up.
Jeez.
But imagine being out 50 miles out in the middle of Lake Superior, and this was in June, but I tell you what, June in Lake Superior, as your caller, you know, called about the Edmund Fitzgerald, it doesn't matter what time of year it is, it gets pretty rough.
It's a rough lake. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Richard.
Hi, so Richard,
go ahead. Question?
Yes, hi. I was wondering, I heard a speculation that there was a connection possibly with, the Bermuda Triangle. Is there any truth to that? Like, have any ships, ever just disappeared and they don't know what ever happened to them, or...
In Bermuda or on the Great Lakes?
Yeah, on the Great Lakes, yeah. I heard that there's like a Great Lakes triangle that is kind of similar to the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, well, it's close, isn't it,
Mark? Yeah, Sherry called earlier, just right before you, and there's said to be, and I don't know the exact coordinates, but there's around Whitefish Bay, north by Caribou Island, and I think as far west as Marquette, there's an area that they bridged as a triangle that there's been so many loss of life and shipwrecks and crazy tales of ships that just sank and collided and ran aground, and that's what they call it. It's called like a Great Lakes Triangle in reference to the Bermuda Triangle. And as we said earlier, it's hard to argue. I mean, here you had Edmund Fitzgerald, 29 souls on board were lost. It's, and with all the, they call it the graveyard of the Great Lakes, but the entrance there by Whitefish Point, because there was, especially in the turn of the century, there were so many ships that would sail, so many more, and schooners, and just very treacherous area, a lot of rocks up there, and just a lot of ships going aground.
Okay, great. Thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Yeah, anything about planes disappearing in that quadrant?
I don't know if it was up there. I know there was a plane that sank, and I want to say it was Lake Michigan, not far, I think northeast of Chicago. It's a little late right now, but we didn't do a program on it. I know there's a submarine that's out there also. There's just so many fascinating, some experts think as many as 10,000 shipwrecks on the Great Lakes. And as we mentioned at the beginning of your show, George, that per mile there's more shipwrecks in the Great Lakes than any other body of water in the world.
Did you ever meet Gordon Lightfoot?
I did. I met him, and I 15 years ago I had an interview with him. And
hey, tell me the story when we come back. This one fascinates me. And we'll be back with the rest of your phone calls, final phone calls, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to take your final phone calls when we come back with our guest, Mark Gumbinger. We're going to get this Gordon Lightfoot story. And then because so many of you have been emailing me that you want to listen to the Edmund Fitzgerald song, Gordon Lightfoot's song. We're going to play it in its entirety right at the end of the program. It is pretty complete. I have not honestly listened to the whole song in a number of years, so we shall do that as well. So all of this next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Mark, tell me about your chat with Gordon Lightfoot, and why did he put the song together?
He was in Madison, Wisconsin, doing a concert shortly after the ship sank, and there was all the buzz out in the newspapers, and as you know, made all the networks, probably a great part to you, thanks to your young young, spirited...
My news instincts.
Go-getting attitude, yeah. Absolutely. And did a concert, and, he knew all, heard all the buzz about the ship that sank, and he thought he'd sit down and write a nice little song. I think little did he realize that he would immortalize this freighter, that we'd be sitting here 30 years later talking about it, and that, I think he was just thinking this is going to be another little folk song for his album, and it just turned out to be such a beautiful, haunting melody and great lyrics, here we are 30 years later. I think your listeners are going to enjoy hearing that when we wrap up tonight.
I even remember the crew I sent up there. The reporter was Ron Sanders. The cameraman was my buddy Les Walden and Ken Schneer. 30
wow.
years ago.
Unbelievable. I want to say, too, George, we've had so many great questions. And if anybody misses me, they can still email me at my edmundfitzgerald.com or go to it. And Virginia, apologize that you missed some calls. So give her a call later, too. Or if you miss her, keep calling her or leave a message.
Have we swamped her?
A little bit. I think she's pretty busy in there. So say hi to Virginia. Tell her Mark says hi. And give her a call at 1-800-642-9860.
I'm amazed we haven't crashed your website yet.
It's still going. It's up and running. In fact, I just got an email from Sherry. She loved calling in.
I can shut it down,
No, don't do that.
I can just turn the Coast listeners on, and we can just crush it for a little bit.
That'd be nice, George.
We won't do that to you. Okay, let's go back to some more calls. First-time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Tom from Elyria, Ohio.
Yeah, Tom.
I appreciate the program very much, and Mark's right on with all his facts. My uncle was the original captain of the Edmund Fitzgerald, Newman Larson, and my brothers sailed on her, and I sailed on her for a trip from Toledo to Silver Bay, and met the Doc Davis, who invented the taconite process.
Wow. So, Tom, what was it like to sail on the Fitz?
Oh, it was wonderful. The some of your callers, and you're right on with the fact that it was one of the first hulls that had that feature that would snake in the water because of its length. It was narrow and long, like the new 1,000-footers are like 125 feet wide. This was like 75 feet wide.
Exactly, 75 feet wide. It would flex a little bit in the water.
When we were loading it in Toledo, in Duluth, you could see the back end twist differently than the front end, and they had lights on the front and the back for the loaders to keep the boat level.
What year did you sail on her?
Oh, I was like 14. I'm 55 now.
Wow, how cool.
Oh, it was very nice. Two people that I know, one I worked with, worked at Amship in Lorain, Ohio. And the Fitz was in before that season, and Amship, according to both these guys in independent conversations, told me that Amship recommended that the Fitz don't go out because of the cracks that you talked about.
Oh.
And Columbia told them to patch them up the best they can and send her out.
More often than not, and Captain McSorley, he said it, you don't make any money sitting in port. And they were really strict about that, and you certainly hope that they didn't want to, put safety in front of the crew members, but that could be the case.
Well, Newman was real proud of his records for tonnage, but it was trips. It wasn't a volume, and after Newman went off, and he was the captain of five different ships, the Zanzibar, the Holloway, I can't think of them all right now.
I was really surprised, Tom, how in 69, I think 71 and 72, how they kept getting lenient on the loads, and they kept adding more and more tonnage.
Well, that's greed, I suppose.
Yeah.
But anyway, I asked Newman, I said, could you hit the bottom and not know it? And he said, oh, absolutely. He said he's seen, 2-inch thick porthole glass bust out when a wave hit.
They did.
What's your opinion on how the Fitz sank that night?
Well, I sat down with my aunt at the Coast Guard for dinner one night with all these guys, and one of the guys was a Coast Guard guy. One was the ran aground. But
Lake Carriers Association.
Yeah, the Lake Carriers Association think it hit ground, and we certainly think it did. And it steamed for a bit because he was at full steam into the wind, trying to keep the ship from floundering. And what we think happened, and the Carriers Association thinks happened, is that it cracked, and it worked for a while, cracked. And when water and taconite get together, not only does it absorb some, but it becomes such a liquid, and it starts to move.
Mm-hmm.
So when it rolled and started listed, it went with it, you know. And then at some point, the single propeller on that's 33 feet in diameter. And at some point when it did crack and it hit the rogue wave, which they talked about, it just submarine. And, well, the ship's 729 feet long, and it's only in 500 feet of water. So look at the graphic in your head, and the bow hit the bottom. And then the torque of the prop twisted the back, and the center part crushed because of all the weight of the taconite. And then the rear inverted, and that's exactly how it's
down. Yeah, the back, probably at that initial plunge, the back third of the ship, the stern was out of the water, almost like when you saw the Titanic sink. And then, as you say, the massive screw still turning and then just twisting in her part in the middle while she went down.
Informed callers. Hey, Tom, thank you for your call.
Thanks,
Tom.
It.
Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
Hey, my name's Brian, and I have a quick question for your guest, Mark.
Okay, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Mark. I just want to know if he's heard of the lighthouse that's off of Port Bolivar Peninsula. It's in Texas. And actually, there's Galveston Island, and you take a ferry from the island to the Port Bolivar. I've grew up there all my life, and I didn't know maybe if you know the history or heard of this lighthouse sitting out there.
I heard of the area. Our new program on U.S. lighthouses, I think we have an old turn-of-the-century shot of the, I think it's the Galveston light, but I'm not familiar with the one you're talking about. And there's just so many wonderful lighthouses all over the country, And we have this new program on U.S. lighthouses, and we cover like 50 of them, but that's only a drop in the bucket. But I haven't. What do you know about it? What year was it built, and what was the height of it? Does it have a third order Fresnel in it?
I think he's listening on his radio now, Marco, so he is off and away.
Thanks for calling. But now go to our website, and you can look up U.S. lighthouses. You might get a kick out of that caller.
Next up, time for another call or two before we're going to play the Edmund Fitzgerald. I want you to get your website out one more time, Mark. And
sure.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mary from Westlake, Ohio.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm wondering if Mark is familiar with Dennis Hale, who was the lone survivor of the USS Daniel Morrell. I think it went down in Lake Huron around 1966.
You are correct, yeah, in November of 66, the gales of November. Yeah, Dennis Hale, he survived. He had his underwear on and a pea coat, and it was over 30 hours. We did a program called The Demise of the Daniel J. Morrell. It's a 48-minute-long program, and you can go to our website on emmafitzgerald.com and look that up or give Virginia a call. And he survived for over 30 hours. I think it was like 36 hours on a life raft in this cold November weather. He was a husky gentleman, and he was the only survivor. Everybody else died. In fact, he was on this life raft with, I think it was three other crew members, and they died before he did. And he actually used these corpses to keep his body temperature warm. And in the morning, he was drifting ashore, and he was delusional. And the Coast Guard found him, and they actually had to even amputate off some of his lower toes because of the frostbite. Amazing story of survival.
Yes, that is amazing as well. Well, 30th anniversary of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Today's the 230th birthday of the Marine Corps. In another few weeks, it'll be 42 years since the Kennedy assassination. I mean, that just sounds like yesterday, doesn't it?
It's amazing. And, George, I just want to thank you for having us on and sharing us our little tales on lighthouses and shipwrecks.
Well, you know, you do a great job. And for people who not only love ghostly lighthouse stories, but also shipwreck stories as well, there's not a tremendous vehicle out there for people to go out and find these. And you have formed a little niche there, and I want them to find you.
That's so kind of you. And anybody that we missed tonight, they can go to our website, edmundfitzgerald.com. That's www.edmundfitzgerald.com, all one word, Edmund with a U. And Virginia apologizes that she missed quite a few callers. If you want to give her a call, she's going to answer phones for the next hour or two.
Yes, Virginia, there will be calls.
1-800-642-9860. Give her a call, 1-800-642-9860. Or if we missed a question, email me at edmundfitzgerald.com. Be glad to research and answer it for you.
Mark, maybe in the next 30th anniversary, which would put us around 2035, you and I can do this again.
I hope we could get on before that.
Thanks, Mark. Take care of yourself.
Thanks so much, George.
Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Danyon Brinkley joins us for the first hour for a little Veterans Day tribute, and then it'll be our Friday into Saturday morning open lines. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. Happy birthday, Marines. Until then, be safe, everyone.